I want you to think back, way, way back, to a time long gone by when life was simpler. Phones were meant to do one thing, call people, and no one knew what the floss dance was. I want you to think all the way back to 1999. Wayne Gretzky had just decided to retire. The euro was established to anchor a strong European Union, and George W. Bush announced that he would run for president after Bill Clinton was acquitted of perjury and obstruction of justice. Oh, for simpler times. Now, there's one more 90s phenomenon that I want you to remember here. Y2K. Remember that? The programming issue that threatened to topple the world. For those of you who are too young to remember Y2K, it went like this. In order to save storage space on teeny little hard drives, I don't know, you remember when 512 megabytes was a big amount of storage? In order to save storage space, programmers would shorten the years to 2 digits instead of 4 digits. So instead of 1997, it would be 97, and then it would count up to 98, and then it would count up to 99. Well, that was all well and good until the turn of the century, when experts speculated that computers wouldn't be able to navigate from 1999 to 2000. It would probably go 1999, 19100, and wreak havoc around the world. Stock exchanges would shut down, people would fall dead as their pacemakers ceased to function, planes would fall out of the air, prison doors would swing open. So the race began to make all technology Y2K compliant. There was a degree of uncertainty in the air, certainly. You know, when I was in university, I had profs who were telling us all about the shelters they built in the woods with food and guns and everything. I remember going out to a friend's on New Year's Eve and wondering, should I really be going too far from home just in case? Well, Y2K came and went without too much trouble. There were a few computers that went from 1999 to 1900, but there were slot machines and bus ticket validators that went a little bit wonky, but otherwise it was no big deal. We got ready. We got prepared. It was okay. The passage that we're looking at this morning reminds us that there's another cataclysmic event somewhere in the future, and this one is far more serious than the Y2K bug was. You know, it can be hard to wrap our minds around it because it's been 2,000 years since Jesus left, but there will come a day when Jesus returns. You know, just as Jesus came into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday all those years ago, Jesus will someday come back to earth to establish his eternal kingdom. What are we doing to get ready? His return will alter the world more than the Y2K bug ever could. How are we preparing? Those are questions that flow from the passage that was just read for us. So I want to invite you to turn there. Turn to Matthew 24 if you haven't already. Again, we're going to cover a lot of ground today. So rather than post all 50 verses, I just want to encourage you to have a Bible open in front of you. Now, before we dig into the text, I want to say this. This is a very complicated passage. You know, one of the scholars that I respect the most as being, you know, supremely intelligent writes, few chapters of the Bible have elicited more disagreement. The history of interpretation here is immensely complex. You know, the difficulty springs from the fact that Jesus is presenting one set of ideas that applies to two different events that happen at two different times. And as Jesus is saying them, neither of them has happened yet. Right, this opens with the disciples asking, when will the temple fall and when will you return? Jesus gives them an answer that addresses both at the same time. Have you ever read a book or maybe a movie where you go through it and at the end there's some twist or revelation that makes you look back at the whole thing in a brand new light? That's how this passage works. You know, this is Jesus using very apocalyptic language to address the fall of the temple and at the same time, his return. you know, at first I thought I might just work my way through the passage and try and have you think about the temple tumble and Jesus' return at the same time. But I think that risks losing the force of this passage for us. So what I'm going to do is handle the passage out of order in a way that I think will make more sense to our Western minds. And it'll certainly highlight, I think, how this passage is important for us living in the 21st century. So I've got 5 points for you that really cover the whole of this passage. Here they are. Jesus will return. Jesus' return will be unexpected. There will be signs. The signs, though, are not the return, so don't be deceived. Instead, get ready. That's what Jesus says. That's what Jesus says in the course of this passage. That's the force of Jesus' words for us. And I want to unpack each of these ideas as we go, show you where they come from the specific words that Jesus says. So first, Jesus will return. Yeah, as I say, it's hard to wrap our minds around this because, you know, we're used to the sun setting in the morning and the sun setting in the morning. That doesn't make any sense. The sun rising in the morning and then the sun setting in the evening and things going on as they always have. But Jesus makes it clear in this passage that he will come again. And really, his return is crucial for our Christian hope. When we come again, when he comes again, we will all be resurrected. Unless he comes before we die, in which case, we go right into the kingdom. When Jesus comes again, he makes everything right. And Jesus says here, I will definitely be back. Verse 29 agrees with this. He is coming back. There will be a period of trial before it. But here Jesus says, 29, after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man, probably the sign which is the Son of Man, will appear in the sky. And all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and with great glory. And he will send his angels with a trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the earth to the other, from one end of the heavens to the other. Jesus is coming back. And when he does, we'll know it. The sun and the moon and the stars will show it. And all people will stand before the Son of Man and give account for how they've lived. You know, it says here the nations of the earth will mourn. It's because they spent their lives chasing money and power and self-interest. Jesus' return is bad news for them. But for those of us who have trusted our lives to Jesus, Jesus' return will be an absolute delight. We will see the Son of Man coming on clouds with power and glory and welcome him as excitedly as those pilgrims did on Palm Sunday. Jesus will return and it will be a cause for us to rejoice. When will Jesus return? Well, the disciples certainly wanted to know. Lots of people would like to know that, but not even Jesus knew when he would return. Look at verse 36. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven or the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the flood. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. You know, Jesus pictures for us a mundane setting for his return. People doing their jobs, doing the housework, just living normal everyday lives. And then out of nowhere, eternity breaks in. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken, the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord has come. Will come. In the history of Christianity, there have been people claiming to have calculated the date of Jesus' return. people have sold their businesses, sold their belongings, gone out to the countryside to wait for Jesus to return, only to discover that date was wrong. If only they had seen this passage. No one knows when the Son will return. Jesus didn't even know. It will be business as usual, and then there he is, the Son of Man, exalted in the sky with power and glory. Jesus' return will be unexpected. Now, that being said, there will be signs. Look at verse 6. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. So before Jesus returns, there will be indicators to suggest that he may be coming. Right? Jesus has said that there will be great upheaval, wars and famines and earthquakes. But he will go on to say that there is also persecution coming for his people. Verse 9. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. There will be upheaval. Jesus' people will be persecuted. Instead, though, of slowing down the spread of the gospel, this persecution actually speeds it up so that people all around the world will know of Jesus' gracious offer of forgiveness. So great upheaval, persecution of believers, and the big one, verse 15. When you see standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, you know what I'm talking about, he says, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on his roof go down to take anything out of his house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be for people who are pregnant and nursing. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on Sabbath. It will be bad enough as it is. There will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, never equaled again. If those days had not been short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. Preceding Jesus' return, there will be a period of great tribulation. And the big thing that points, that highlights that is this abomination of desolation. In Daniel, it's the embodiment of evil, of sacrilege. The abomination of desolation is the personification of everything that is counter to Christ. He's the Antichrist, you know, that appears in various points through Scripture. And here, just as Revelation says, Jesus says that this abomination will appear to oppose God's purposes before Jesus returns. So before Jesus returns, there will be signs, upheaval, persecution, spiritual opposition. But this is important. The signs are not the return. Jesus makes that abundantly clear in this passage. Look at verse 8. These are just the birth pains. They're not the real thing. They're one of the first contractions. The baby may come on the fifth contraction or the 50th. You don't know. And verse 6, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but don't be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. There'll be signs, but those signs are not the return. So Jesus says, don't get worked up. Don't get deceived. He says that before he lists the signs. He says that immediately afterwards. Look at verse 4. Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ, and deceive many. And then he says, here are the signs that will precede my coming. And then verse 23, at that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I've told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is out in the desert, go out. Or here he is in the inner secret rooms, don't believe it. You know, this is what makes me wary of identifying world events with end time prophecy. You know, a tingling in my arm might mean I'm having a heart attack, or a tingling in my arm might just be a tingling in my arm. An earthquake may mean the return of the Son of Man, or it might just be an earthquake. False prophets will step up to assign theological meaning to world events. They might be right, or they may be the false prophets that Jesus warns against. You know, I think it's fine to have your own suspicions about when Jesus will return, but Jesus says, don't let them lead you astray, because when he returns, we'll know. Verse 27, for as lightning that comes from the east is visible from the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. You know, very colorful ways to say, you'll know. Lightning fills the sky in an instant, right? Doesn't take seconds even to travel from east to west. Everybody sees it at the same time. And no matter where we were in the farm, you know, in the barn, in the bush, in the field, at the dump a kilometer away, if you saw vultures circling in the sky, you know what's going on. So it will be when Jesus returns. We'll know, and so it pays to be cautious now and not deceived. Better to prepare by getting ready than trying to guess the date. Instead, we should invest our time by getting ready. Look at verse 43. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch. He would not have let his house be broken into. So also you must be ready, because the Son of Man will come in an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give their food at a proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him giving the servants their food at the proper time when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says, well, my master is staying away a long time. So he beats his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards. The master of the servant will come home on a day when he does not expect him, an hour he is not aware of, and he will cut into pieces. Assign him a place with the hypocrites, where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus calls us to be prepared, to be ready and waiting and faithfully living, faithfully stewarding all that God has entrusted to us. Jesus will return. His return will be unexpected. There will be signs. The signs, though, are not the return, so don't be deceived. Instead, get ready. Now, if you have a really good memory, you'll remember that this passage is about Jesus' return, but it's about something else, isn't it? It's about the fall of the temple. This passage opens with the disciples drooling over how gorgeous the temple is, and Jesus saying, don't look at the outside. A beautiful veneer can hide a rotten heart. And he says, this temple will fall. And he was right. You know, simmering in the background of all the passages that we've seen in Matthew is this sense that the Jews were not happy with Roman occupation, right? Just think about how frustrated people were with tax collectors, with Matthew, for example, who was collecting money for the Romans. In Jesus' day, Jewish people were frustrated by Rome, but generally not mobilized. By the 60s AD, they were in all-out revolt. And just as this passage predicted, there were signs. There were wars and rumors of wars. For sure, the nation of Israel rising against the nation of Rome. There was a major earthquake in Jerusalem in 67 AD. All kinds of false prophets rose up in Israel to provide questionable guidance. We know all of this because there was a Jewish man named Josephus working for the Romans, and he wrote it all down in a text called The Jewish War. You can actually read the whole thing online. In 70 AD, Rome finally sent, you know, a huge army to Jerusalem, laid siege to it, breached the walls, stormed the temple. They burned it down, they toppled it. The abomination of the desolation appeared when the Romans, you know, knocked the temple down and set their standards in its remains to say, not in Yahweh we trust, but in strength we trust. And although the stars didn't fall from the sky, it's really interesting to read in Josephus that the whole time the siege was on, he observed a star shaped like a sword and a comet hanging over Jerusalem. So Jesus was right. The temple tumbled just like he said it would here in Matthew 24. He also said in Matthew 24 that he would come again. Are we ready? Let me give you a big idea to address that. We get ready for Jesus' second coming by faithfully living. We get ready for Jesus' second coming by faithfully living. Okay. So first, there is a second coming. Just as he said in Matthew 24, Jesus is coming again. Just as he entered Jerusalem with wild acclaim on Palm Sunday, he will return in power at the end of the age, and the whole world will know it. This will be good news for everyone who has lived for him, and terrible news for those who didn't. And actually, when you put this passage alongside other passages, other scriptures that describe Jesus' return, they line up really well. Jesus knew what he was talking about. You know, Jesus predicts that his return will be preceded by upheaval and wars and famines. That's a common theme throughout the New Testament. There will be persecution of believers and false prophets rising up to deceive the people. That's the beast and the false prophet and their minions in Revelation 12 and 13. Jesus anticipates this abomination that desecrates the holy. Well, that's the man of lawlessness that appears in 2 Thessalonians 2. There will be a great tribulation, that's Revelation 9. The stars will fall from the heavens and there'll be a trumpet blast, 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Thessalonians 4, this chapter, verse 31. And then Jesus will appear. And the whole world will know it. Everyone who has lived in light of his grace will delight, knowing that their Savior who loves them has come. The rest of the nations will mourn because in that instant, they'll realize they've wasted their lives chasing the wind. And then we will all give an account for what we have done. Starting with the first question, what have you done with Jesus' offer of forgiveness? That day will come. My job is to help you prepare for that day. So what have you done with Jesus' offer of forgiveness? Have you received it? Have you made it your own? Have you heard the Heavenly Father who loves you unconditionally saying, come be my child and enjoy life with me forever? If you haven't, then answer him. If you have, well, let's get ready. Let's be the one in the field that's taken. How do we do that? Well, we get ready by faithfully living. What does that look like? Let me highlight three ways from this passage that I think we get ready. First, we begin by being confident in Jesus. You know, one of the biggest concerns that I see in Jesus' words here is this concern that people will be taken in by charlatans who twist Jesus' message. Jesus says over and over again, don't be deceived. Don't get swept up in predictions about when I'll come back. Certainly don't close up your business so you can be ready on such and such a date. You know, it can be tough, I guess, for us to just wait without putting a date on the calendar. You know, there's some people who love to do that. But Jesus calls us simply to be ready and waiting and faithfully living. You know, not swayed by suggestions that someone else is the Messiah. Not taken in by people who claim to know when Jesus returned. Not even he knew when he was coming back. We would do well to have on the back of our minds at all times this reality that Jesus will return. Letting the knowledge that he will return shape the way that we act. You know, don't let the 2,000 years since he left dissuade you from trusting that he will return. he will return, and it'll be worth the wait. We get ready by being confident in Jesus. Second, we get ready by enduring trials. You know, the period before Jesus' return will be a time of tribulation. Whether or not we live in that time now, that's a call that I'm not entirely comfortable making. But certainly Jesus calls us generally to anticipate trials. And so I think that we should. You know, Jesus clearly anticipates that his followers will face persecution, whether it's end time persecution or just the normal kind. And it may be tremendous, like going on trial or being hated by the nations, but it might be more mundane than that. Right? Jesus says they may put you to death, but he also says some people's love will grow cold because the world just keeps getting farther and farther from God. Right? The world around us will loosen its morals little by little so that what was once forbidden becomes no big deal. What was no big deal becomes, why would you even think twice? And some followers will fall away as a result. But God says, endure. Remain steadfast and firm. Rooted in him. Committed to what God calls truth. No matter what people around us say. We get ready by enduring through trial. Third, we get ready by faithfully living, right? God is looking for people to be faithfully stewarding the opportunities and resources that he has been given us, right? That's the point of the faithful servant. Master comes home, finds him doing what he's supposed to do. If you're an educator, educate well. If you take care of people's lives, take good care of them. If you're retired, use some of that time to benefit the kingdom in prayer and service and volunteerism. You know, we each have roles to play in the advancement of the kingdom, and Jesus will be absolutely delighted to get back and find us doing what he has called each of us to do. We get ready by faithfully stewarding the time, the resources, the opportunities that God has given us. We get ready for Jesus' second coming by faithfully living. You know, the world at large spent a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort getting ready for Y2K. Just to bring us back to 1999 here. The Canadian government spent upwards of $50 billion getting Y2K compliant. Estimates put American spending over $100 billion. Is that a lot of money? William Daley, Commerce Secretary of the United States, asked. Absolutely. But the potential cost of not doing anything was far greater. That applies here. Jesus' return means we no longer live for ourselves. We are living for our master's benefit, to be faithfully stewarding all he has given us. If we shirk from that, the cost is far greater. But if we take time to appreciate the grace of God in our lives and the free gift of life that God has given us, it just makes sense that we would invest our lives in gratitude for what he has done. Jesus will come back. I want to hear him. I want you to hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. We get ready for Jesus' second coming by faithfully living.